Welcome to The Athlete and the NARP. I'm Jenna Daly, and I'm the athlete.
And I'm Claire Fenton, and I'm the NARP. And if you don't know what a NARP is, then you're one too.
Welcome to the 18th episode of The Athlete and the NARP. Today, we're going to be discussing the WNBA, taking a pretty deep dive into it, mostly focusing on the current compensation arrangement that they have going on because there is going to be new negotiations surrounding the collective bargaining agreement that they currently have. And we want to focus on what they have going on now, what the players and the owners want in the future, and what that means for the future of the league, honestly, in terms of its growth and its marketing and what the players want to get out of it. So, big, exciting stuff.
But first,
some personal news.
Some personal news, as you can see and hear, we're in a different spot. So, we have moved to Chicago. We now room together, which is really exciting. Also makes this a lot easier and more fun to do. So bear with us as we kind of figure out this whole new, we don't have our nice podcast studio anymore, but we did pretty well soundproofing this room. Mm-hmm. So, but we are excited because this is our new chapter. And with that becomes a whole new chapter of The Athlete and the NARP. So I think I speak for both of us by saying that we're really excited to come back after our hiatus, and we have a lot of new fun ideas.
Yes. Very exciting.
So, with that in mind, let's get into it.
Let's dive right in.
Yeah, so like Claire said, we're talking about the WNBA and kind of all things revenue, money, and a little bit extra. The WNBA has a collective bargaining agreement. It was signed in January of 2020. Based on the 2019 season, and then the players decided to opt out to not let it extend, and now it'll expire on October 31st. With that comes two main issues. Those are the biggest ones that we've seen discourse on and split opinions on. The first being revenue sharing. So we'll get into kind of what that means, what that looks like, different outcomes for it, and then also prioritization with the league and the contract. So again, we'll explain that. Don't worry.
So we're going to talk first about, I think, the big hot button topic that's on everybody's mind when it comes to the WNBA, which is the payment structure. Because there's been a lot of talk from players about wanting more money. I mean, everybody wants more money.
Who doesn't?
I do. Anybody that works for a company wants more money. But I think in particular with the WNBA, because the league has seen so much growth, especially in recent years with the rise of, I think, college basketball becoming way more popular. And so those players that are coming into the league now have a really big platform even before they're there professionally. There's just a lot more money out there for these players in terms of sponsorships and things like that, but they also want to be compensated through the league. The league shouldn't be the, right now for a lot of these players, it's where they're getting the least amount of their money. Like, mm-hmm. they're getting a lot of money from their sponsorships, like I said, and their outside deals and maybe the other commitments that they have. But the actually playing in the W, which is, like, kind of also how the league is called, their salaries are pretty low for professional athletes. And honestly, kind of just even salaries in general.
Yeah, they actually, I will say, not that I'm about to say what my current salary is, but the salary minimums for some people are close to what I make as someone who just graduated and is, working like a temporary job.
No, for
so
sure.
For context, I did look into the, I guess, current or expiring CBA, and the salary maximums, which a lot of people have been focusing on, the base salary maximum in 2025 is $214,466 for most players. And then they have this thing called a supermax, which I thought was really interesting for veteran players, or they said younger players to, like, incentivize them to stay with their team, which I thought was interesting. But that, I was like, oh, that'll be a lot more. It's only $249,000. So not that much of a jump.
No.
But also, keep in mind, that's the salary maximum. The salary minimum for someone with 0 to 2 years of experience this year was $66,000.
That's not great.
Right.
That's, like, also pretty rough for a lot of time sports, obviously, are in cities.
Right,
which are higher cost of living places. That's not a great salary for, like, some of these really, like, if you were in New York or something
like that. Well, do you remember that comment that I think it was Angel Reese made about not being able to afford her apartment, and people like went hard on her being like, are you serious? Maybe don't live in this place, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, well, now when you're looking at the fact that some people, I mean, she was drafted higher up, so she is not on the salary. But if she was, $66,000, also, you are, like, she is a celebrity, she is an athlete, she's gonna need the security of, like, a nicer place, 100%. And probably proximity to her training facilities. So then, yeah, it kind of makes sense why, like, she says, I might not be able to afford this apartment on my salary. Not that I ever had negative comments,
no,
but I didn't really understand it, and then this really puts it in perspective for me.
Definitely. And so also to kind of just to really dig into it and address how are these players paid, where they want the money to be coming from, because obviously I think one of the main arguments is that, you know, the WNBA isn't as popular as the NBA, that they shouldn't be making the same amount of money as Steph Curry or LeBron James or whatever. That shouldn't even be an option for them. And that's not what the players are asking for. I think that's maybe one of the common misunderstandings. They're not asking to be paid equally as the men. Like, no one, they're not, I'll call it delusional, not delusional enough to think that any one of them would get paid like
not
Steph
yet.
Curry, for example. Not yet, yes. But that's not what they're asking for. What they're basically asking for is to have a greater percentage of revenue sharing in the current, like, TV rights deal and all of the revenue that comes into the league. For example, the TV deal is big because they just signed a new one. It's been standard across most professional sports leagues, like I would say men's and women's, a little under 50% of the revenue sharing is allocated to the players. The WNBA currently, it's less than 10%. It's like between 9 and 10% is what they get of the revenue sharing. So that's a pretty major discrepancy. That's the most factual part of all of this, I would say, is just that they are being like way undervalued in terms of what they believe and what is standard in that industry in terms of what percentage of the revenue sharing goes to players. They're asking that that revenue sharing percentage goes up to closer to 50%. Maybe in this collective, you know, maybe in this round of bargaining, they won't quite get to 50, but somewhere more than 10,
right.
I think is really just
they're
what
just
they
asking to for the league to really acknowledge the growth that they've really seen, because their previous CBA was based on 2019. This is right before you had COVID. So a lot of no one hit their ticket sales in 2020 or even 2021, but you can't expect them to at that point. Like, there were no crowds in 2020, and then there were limited ones in 21. So you don't have that. Then you also have, like you said, the evolution of college basketball with now NIL and just having that coverage on it. But then you have stars like Caitlin Clark, who have come into the league and brought her fans with them, and Paige Beckers and Ava Reese, like all of these really big names have now come into the WNBA. So they're really just asking for them to acknowledge the work that they've put in and the value that people are now seeing. And yeah, like you said, it probably won't be 50% in this new one. But one thing that they were talking about with the salary cap, which I can explain more, but briefly, right now, it's fixed at an annual increase every year by 3%. And that's like how they've been kind of creating like the salary cap. And it's been going each year 3%. Now they're saying, look, our value is so much higher. We need to change this. Like, we can't just gradually increase annually. But I'm wondering if maybe that structure would work better for revenue sharing. So as they improve and continue to grow their value and their viewership and impressions and everything, then maybe you could see a gradual annual increase makes a lot more sense there.
Mm-hmm. There is evidence to show that the league has grown very, very quickly and very, very much within the past few years, like the timeline that Jenna just described. For example, one of the ways that you can kind of measure how well a league is doing is the value of the teams themselves. So, like, for example, the New York Liberty, which is one of the most well-known, well-recognized brands, I would say, in the league, in 2019, which, again, is right around this timeline that Jenna was talking about, they were bought for around $15 million. Like, that's kind of the high end. Currently, they're valued at $450 million. So that's obviously a really crazy increase.
Massive spike.
Much more than, for example, the 3% increase in the in the salary cap over those 6 years or so. And definitely when you're seeing like the 10% revenue sharing that might have been based on those early numbers, the amount of growth that just that team, for example, has experienced is massive. And another thing that kind of also goes to show how the league is growing is the expansion fees that these teams are paying.
Which there's been a lot of expansion teams in general in the last couple, 3 years, and then more to come.
Yes.
Including two in this offseason.
Exactly. And that's another reason why the players are saying now is a good time to bargain for more money, is because the three new teams that are coming into the league in the next few years, which is in Cleveland, Detroit, and Philadelphia, they're all paying $200 million in expansion fees, which Golden State, they created the Golden State Valkyries team a couple years ago.
Love the name, by the way.
Love the name.
It's
the colors.
It's a mouthful to say, but it's amazing.
It's gorgeous. They did great with their branding and everything. But they only paid $50 million, and that was 2 years ago. Now that price has quadrupled, $200 million. So there's like a ton more money laying around, again, which players feel like they deserve, I think deservedly so, deserve a cut of. And the growth in terms of, again, things like the salary cap is not quite keeping up with the growth that the league is demonstrating in terms of some of these metrics. And I also wanted to touch on the new rights deal that they got, because that's another point where this money is pouring in. So the NBA and the WNBA, which we can kind of get into a little bit, have always been inextricably tied together. The NBA was instrumental in founding the WNBA and funding it. And so currently this rights deal is like for both leagues. It's like tied up with both, but the W gets a portion of it. And so the new total rights deal is $76 billion that is for both leagues. Currently they are valuing the portion that the W gets as $2.2 billion. Now, that's obviously quite a lot of money, $2.2 billion. There have been arguments out there that that's actually a lowball offer and an undervaluing of the league, and that it should be closer to $10 billion. That's an argument you can make. I'm just saying that that is what people are saying, that they've been undervalued, not by a little bit, but like a lot.
I mean, when you do hear, $76, $77 billion, and then you hear $2 billion, like that is a massive discrepancy. I would need to see more like stats and things about the valuation. But when I hear that, I'm like, is it really $75 billion different? I'm not convinced on that.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's
different. Absolutely. Significantly different, I even accept. But $75 billion with a B? I don't know.
Billion with a B.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, agreed. Obviously, with these types of negotiations, like, who knows exactly how that number was settled on, decided. But either way, there's more. That's that $2.2 billion, even so, whether it's a lowball or not, was way more than they've even had previously. So there's just, from all these different avenues, there's much more money coming into the league, and the players are just saying, hey, like, we're the actual labor. Like, we're the ones, you know, we're the faces of the league. We're the ones doing the work. We should be able to see more of this.
I mean, yeah.
At the end of the day, I mean, some people,
I don't disagree.
Some people just really seem to have a problem with that, and
I think something that people get really stuck on, and then I remember you researching this and being like, "Oh wow," is that a lot of the things out there, like the WNBA, isn't profitable. The teams aren't profitable. The league isn't profitable. They're leeching off the NBA, whatever, whatever. And then we kind of found that these valuations, no one really knows how to actually like quantify what they are. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of stating what they are.
So I think the other thing that's I think is also difficult about women's sports in general is that a lot of these leagues are very, very young. And so people obviously view them as, when they're not as profitable as men's leagues, or the growth is low, or there's just like these low crowds, like people are always quick to criticize and compare to men's leagues and say like, oh, they don't deserve the money, or no one watches women's sports, and blah, 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 blah.
And we can't say that, okay, the NBA had 50 years on the W, but they should wait 50 years. Like, that's not how it works. Like, the way that if you look at sports and the viewership and the new deals, like, every single media rights deal is a new, like, record. So it's just accelerating in a way that you, like,
that would be a ridiculous argument to say.
Right, exactly. But the other side of it is, like, people forget, I think especially with the NBA, but with men's sports in general, just because these leagues have been around so long, like, nobody's really been around to see the start of those leagues. So the NBA, like, when it first began, was absolutely not profitable. Like, it was a total flop, just to, like, be frank.
I actually researched, to interject, I researched the salaries in the beginning season of what the NBA made, which, to preface, like, the beginning of the NBA is a little bit different than, like, the modern era of it, but I do have both. The first season in 1946 to 47 had a salary cap of $55,000 per team, which is about $908,000 today. So that was the salary cap per team. The highest paid player, it made $264 today. Not only was he a player, he was also the publicity director and business manager of the Detroit Falcons.
Wow.
So he only got paid $264 to do all three of those jobs.
Wow.
And then in the 80s, then the cap kind of changed like every 5-10 years, and the cap was roughly expanding by like 1 to 2 million every year. Okay. So it got better.
It got better.
Just wanted to put that out there. So no. When she says it was on the brink of collapse, it was literally atrocious.
It truly was. And even in recent years, like, some of the teams aren't profitable. So, like, ESPN in 2017, they did a report on just all the books, I guess you could say, of the teams in the league, and found that 14 out of 30 of them, so almost half, lost money before collecting the revenue sharing payouts, like, from across the league. And even after those payments, 9 teams still finished in the red. So 30% of the league still wasn't profitable, and those teams, I'm going to call them out. Atlanta, yes, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Cleveland, Detroit, Memphis, Milwaukee, Orlando, San Antonio, and Washington. And some of these franchises are, like, not the best, but some of these franchises have won championships within the past decade. Like, these aren't, you know, complete slouch teams, right, but still finished in the red. And really, it becomes, with the league in particular, it's more of an issue of, like, smaller market versus larger market. That disparity is so big that, like, smaller markets can't keep up with the larger markets at times. So it's a different issue necessarily than what the W is facing. But the point is, these players are still getting paid, even when their teams aren't profitable. Whereas in the W, that's the main argument that's been used against them. And even though they're, like, an emerging lead, I don't know, it bugs me a little bit that people automatically go to, well, the first place we should cut, I guess, spending is the players. It's like, no, like, you pay your employees what they're worth.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's your job as business owners to figure everything else out.
And if you invest in something, it will grow.
Yes, which it is.
If you have a good product and you have good players, which they do, it will grow.
Yes, exactly. So I think people are so quick to see this non-profitability as, like, exclusively a women's sports issue. But you have to remember, like, it is such a very, very young league. And the NBA was floundering at the beginning. Look at it now. Completely sustainable. One of, like, a global brand. Who knows how long it would take the W to get there, if it will ever get there. But, like, the point is that there is demonstrated growth. And the path is certainly there for them to get there. But, like, not without players being able to afford, like, kind of the basics in terms of, like, a normal lifestyle in the cities,
right,
where they're drafted, not choosing to play, but drafted to play.
Right. I wanted to ask you kind of your opinion about something that there was, like, some flack about. So in the All-Star game, when the W players wore those shirts, and if you haven't heard of it, they wore shirts that said, like, pay us what you owe us. And that got a lot of attention because the All-Star weekend, you know, it's a big deal. So, but then there were also criticisms that they didn't really try that hard in the games and kind of, like, slouched a bit and stuff. And, like, people came at them, including, like, former W players. So I was wondering what you thought of that.
In particular of just the effort that was put
out
the
effort,
games?
Yes.
Well, first of all, that's something I would say also that's actually been a very hot topic in the NBA, because there's been a big push in the NBA that the players, like, truly could not care less about the All-Star game. I think in a lot of sports, obviously, players put less prioritization on that. But in the NBA, it's definitely become an issue in recent years.
It's very noticeable.
It's very obvious. So I don't want the women to be held to a different standard than the men as far as that goes.
I mean, that's a whole issue in the NBA.
In life, in society. That's how it goes.
Yes.
But I would just say that also kind of touches maybe on an issue that is also part of what they're looking for in the CBA, which is roster limit sizes, where like right now in the league, the roster limits are pretty low. And so when players get injured or sick or can't play, like the teams are hurting. So like the bodies are like in the W are like very, very valuable. So any type of injury that you could get by like playing hard, going hard in a All-Star game, for example, like is not only a personal risk you, but like is a very real risk to like your team. So there have been times where teams have played with like 8 or 9 players. Like a professional basketball team can only field 8 or 9 players for a game. Like that's not acceptable. Like it wears its wear on the player's body.
It's not sustainable.
No, it's not acceptable or sustainable, especially when there is a fix, which is like get a couple more players on here. Mm-hmm. Like just up. They're not asking for, you know, like 20 players to be floating around, but just a couple more. Like that helps. That gives you bodies.
Yeah. In terms of the All-Star like effort and performance, I completely think that the W players deserve absolutely to be paid more, and they have put in the time and the effort to deserve that. At the same time, it is a really difficult thing to be able to rally behind them if they're going to say, pay us what you owe us, and then on probably one of the biggest weekends that they could have gotten media attention, and they also sat down with the league to discuss the CBA, then to also not put in like your best effort, I think that sends the wrong message. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of do think that, like, okay, if you fully believe that you deserve to get paid more and more like to be valued higher, which yes they do, then show that, then like act like it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I absolutely understand that they put in maximum effort for the entire season, and then especially in the postseason, absolutely. But in the point that they are right now, I do think that unfortunately they kind of have to grind a little bit extra. Like, my mom loves the cliche, like, the squeaky wheel gets greased.
Yeah, sure.
But like in this case, it's kind of true. Like the more you showcase that is what you deserve, and yes, I absolutely think that they're held to a higher standard and are forced to prove that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But you show that you earn it, you get there. Mm-hmm. You will get there. And then I also saw a quote from, I'm forgetting the player, but they said, we put in all of our effort through the season and whatever. And I'm like, okay, yes, nothing wrong with that. That should be probably the case. But this is such an important weekend, and it was kind of a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I don't want to get into a tangent on All-Star games, because I actually like the weekend so much across all sports. But I definitely think that's a valid point. Like, yeah, if you are going to choose that weekend to make the statement, then yeah, you kind of also have to show up a little bit.
Yeah, I just felt like it was a lackluster decision.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a fair point. I think everyone's entering into these upcoming negotiations with good faith. I just wanted to make a tangential point, or like point on like comparing like the, you know, standards for men versus mm-hmm. women. The NBA has, even though we've talked about like these purchasing powers and their salaries, it's like the NBA,
that was in the 50s, like
in the, no, whatever. But I want to say the yeah. NBA has never paid the men as like poorly as it has paid the women.
Right.
Even when the NBA was like floundering, the salaries that they were giving the players were still, had more purchasing power than what the at the time, like,
right.
Obviously,
well,
not
once
now,
they
but...
yeah, once they introduced revenue sharing and like the gradual or the more gradual increase to salary cap, then yes
exactly,
yeah,
so
you can't really count the things before that, is
right.
What I'm saying,
so even if right, but so I guess my basic point on that is, even though it's like a fledgling league, and it's like there's this idea, I suppose, that which actually in recent days allegedly has been espoused by like leadership in the W, that players should be grateful for what they're being given. Like they should just be grateful that there's any money out there at all for them. And I'm like, well, that I just really despise that attitude, whether it applies to men or women, like any type of kind of athlete in this scenario. Like, if you're worth more, you shouldn't just be grateful and accept. Like, the NBA, the men's have always gotten paid with their worth. Like, the women are not getting paid with their worth. Like, mm-hmm. they shouldn't just be grateful that they have a job. I think that's a very short-sighted and just easy talking point out of actually, like, thinking critically about the detriments of that, like, that there are real issues that need to be fixed in the league.
And I don't think any player is, like, taking any of it for granted, you know?
No.
Like, all of the, obviously, like, anyone who's in the league is thrilled to be there, mm-hmm. thrilled to play there, like, get that opportunity, go back.
Because they have other options. Like, they could play internationally and stuff if they really didn't want to.
Exactly.
And so now we maybe want to bounce to, like, the ownership side of things and talk yes. about what's a big point for them in these upcoming negotiations.
So tell me, Claire, what is prioritization?
What is prioritization? I'm so excited to tell you. So basically, with the players obviously want more money. They want to be paid what they're worth and make the league kind of, let's just say, worth their time to be in. If they're going to be investing time and energy into it, they want to reap the benefits of those rewards. On the ownership side, they're saying, okay, like, that's cool that what you want, what we want from you is for you to make the W your priority. So a lot of the times in the past, as we've seen, for example, in the highly publicized case with Brittany Griner, players have been forced, not obviously actually been forced, but to earn somewhat of a living, been forced to play internationally or find other avenues of revenue in the off season because the W salaries just quite aren't cutting it for them. And so the W ownership is saying, hey, like, we don't want you to do that. We want your focus and your energy and your time to be spent on the W, obviously, so that hopefully the product is better. We can have you play more games. We can bring in more money, like more marketing, all of that stuff, which, like, totally makes sense, 100%. So that would kind of limit the player's ability to play overseas and also the player's ability to even play internationally.
So this was enacted in 2023. That's when it started. And players with 0 to 2 years of experience are actually excluded from this. So they are allowed to, like, go do other things. But really, the only other exclusion other than that is that players are allowed to go play for their national teams.
Right. That's what I meant. I said internationally, that's what I meant. Yeah. In terms of the...
They did get, like, strict about they can only leave 2 weeks before the competition. They're expected, I think, like, 2 days after the competition ends and things. But so there are that exclusion.
Which also gets tied into the salary point, which is, okay, players might be like, fine, we'll make the W our focus, but then we need more money.
Right.
Because if we're not allowed to get these other avenues of revenue, such as, for example, this Unrivaled League, which mm-hmm. Jenna can maybe talk more about, then we need our main source of income to actually be a viable main source of income to maybe put pressure on the league or to give players, like, a good domestic avenue for revenue. Jenna.
Well, take it away.
What have they done?
So, Breonna Stewart and Nafisa Collier have created this league called Unrivaled, and it is a 3v3 off-season league, started last year, got a lot of attention right away, also had a lot of capital behind it. Top athletes really invested in it, including NBA players, W players, other athletes, Olympians and things, so that was really cool to see. They had 36 players playing last year. And they limit it to the pretty much like the top 36 players. And there's a whole way that the coaches draft these players. What's really cool about that, which isn't really important, but I just find it cool. Mm-hmm. The coaches draft the teams, but they don't know which team they're actually coaching.
Oh, that's really neat. Yeah. That kind of ensures, like, the balance.
Exactly. That's so really cool. Yeah, they have, like, they have staking in the game no matter what they do.
That's really
so
neat. I like
yeah,
that.
I do actually like that. It's something different. I believe this year they're expanding to 48 players, and they do have 2 new teams, so that would mm-hmm. make sense. Last year, though, the salary pool was $8 million. Keep in mind, this is 3 games a week for 8 weeks.
I mean, you can already see that that's a ton more money exactly. than a lot of players would be yeah. making. Now, these are the top players, so their salary would be greater than that $66,000 we had talked about previously, right. but still, that's quite
a lot of money. I mean, it's over $100,000 more than the W's average.
Yeah,
so that's awesome. You can take those. Yeah, it's awesome. Also, something that I thought was really interesting is that players get equity in the league. Mm. They didn't say the, like, percent. I couldn't find it, but that is really interesting, too, because that kind of shows the idea of revenue sharing will work, and people will be interested in this and put effort into this. And, yeah, I think it makes, even this league itself, makes it easier for players to prioritize W. Even if they're playing in it, I think that's really cool.
I don't know if you had any names in particular, but NBA players who've invested in the league. Like, one thing that I think is so funny to me, I think I would say with the NBA in particular, is that people are always so quick to criticize women's basketball, whether it's at the collegiate level or the WNBA level, and be like, nobody watches women's basketball. It's this, 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 and this. All the NBA players that I've seen talk about the league in like an intelligent manner, I would say, are so complimentary and appreciative of the league and the style that the women play, and do see real value in it, as is shown with, you know, them investing in the league, and like even with the Golden State Valkyries, for example, or even the Pacers. Like, you see Tyrese Halliburton shows up to as many games as he can to support Caitlin Clark in particular, but also just the game. And then with the Golden State Valkyries, I've seen a ton of players like on the current Golden State team that are there like all the time at a lot of games, showing up, like actively supporting these women because they want to be there and they see value and they enjoy watching them play.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so silly to me that, again, you see like just random people shitting on these players, but it's like the professionals are actually like, yeah, there's something here.
It's literally the people that like the W is being compared to, like, yeah, they're being the most supportive. So supportive, yeah, towards the W players. Yes. So it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, that. Exactly.
Something I also wanted to bring up about Unrivaled, as to why I think it's a good idea, at least for right now. Maybe long term, like, it won't really serve a purpose as the W grows and then players do prioritize it, sure. But I was thinking, as the W is trying to grow, this honestly maintains their audience through the off season. Mm-hmm. This is such an easy way for people to kind of still follow along the players, if not, makes it even easier to watch them, because it's only 3 days a week, 8 weeks, that's it. Mm-hmm. And then they also have like a tournament in the post, like their postseason. And I mean, it's not the W's viewership, but like people still remain engaged. And I think that's a really important part of when you're trying to grow any business.
Mm-hmm. And I think 3-on-3 in particular is smart because A, it's something different. B, you're only putting like the top quote unquote players in the league. So it's name brand recognition and things people already know. But then 3-on-3 in particular is like, I think, really cool and really fun to watch. It's very much more individualized and like very creative and like more on the fly in that sense. So like you get to see people like doing their thing.
Yeah.
Specifically, I'm thinking of Haley Van Lith whenever she played like 3-on-3. It's like really fun to watch her because she like is really quick and like drives and makes really cool moves, and like you're focused on her, I think, a lot of the time. And it's like really cool to watch a player shine individually like that.
You probably also see some players showcase things that you don't get to see.
I mean,
exactly what you're saying, more individual focus. But you, like, that's kind of cool because then you might have, I mean, granted, these are the top players, so they're probably all well known for something.
Mm-hmm.
But you might see players that aren't the top 10, top 15, kind of like rise to like stardom in Unrivaled because of certain things they get to do there.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. 100%. And then you can kind of like follow that growth into the W season.
So. Right. And I always think that it's like, the way I've always gotten into teams usually or sports is like, there's someone that catches my eye,
mm-hmm.
and then you want to start paying attention to that team. And then you get more into the team and the league and you just learn more and more about it. But for me, it usually starts with like one person. Like, you see something that's really, really cool, let me learn more about it. And so I think with this Unrivaled League that is specifically like showcasing individual level or just focusing again on these small group of players more, like, I think it's a good entryway for people into the rest of it.
I mean, we've done the research before and like that is the trend as to how people are getting into sports now, especially Gen Z, women, really, that those are kind of like the big larger demographics. But even when you get more specific, like, that is how people are getting into it, whether it's through the docuseries that are everywhere now or through social media. You are really seeing people attached to a couple or handful of players and then expanding from there.
So kind of like you said with the equity and things like that, like, this is the players clearly putting together something that seems like it's working, that they think will work and that they get value from, and they're getting paid and putting out a good product. And it's like, why have they been able to figure that out
so quickly?
So quickly, and the owners have not. And I think because that's
two women created.
Right. True. But I think it's like, I think with everything with the W, all these issues, quote unquote, I really feel like it's more of just like an ownership or leadership issue, because it's like, how do you have so much more money coming in and yet the league is still losing money? Like, that doesn't right. seem to be making sense. Like, they've said that the league is losing like tens of millions per year. It's like, well, when you have all the extra money we described from these TV rights deals, from these expansion fees, from just the, I mean, the obvious growth of the sport, it's like, how are these leagues still losing money? And I think the relationship with the NBA for me is obviously, you can't deny that it's like, it's been good because it literally the NBA and former NBA commissioner, David Stern, they founded the league in 1996. Like, that was mm-hmm. an NBA project. They put it together. They put down the money for it. They built it up. They were the majority owners up until a few years ago. Now, W owners have 42%. NBA owners have 42%. A team of investors has 16%. But obviously, the NBA still has a pretty big stake in the league. I think maybe, I don't know if you want to call it the issue, but I think where things can get a little tricky is that actually, even though it says WNBA owns 42%, six of the 14 teams in the W are owned by people who also own NBA teams. So actually, NBA owners have over 60% of the W, which is, as the Atlanta Dream CEO put it, if the WNBA owners say they want to do something and the NBA says no, the answer is no. So I think it becomes like a little bit tricky then when you're discussing things like this joint TV rights deal. It's like, okay, well, when there's the, in that case, like there obviously is these conflicting interests then of, okay, well, the money has to go to one of the two of you, but like you're overlapped in those right. interests. And I think it could be beneficial, but also then at the same time, it's like, you know, the NBA wants its money. so it is just an interesting relationship. And I think it would be obviously for the benefit if the league moves away from having that joint ownership, that joint, partnership lasts for like too much longer. I think it'd be better. Like, I think that's obviously
it's very funny that you said this because I had that exact question in my head. Like, oh, is it possible for the W to like stray away from the NBA? It was a resounding no. when I did research, I really couldn't find a lot. Well, I honestly couldn't find anything that was like in support of the WNBA branching off, even in the near future. So I do think that, I don't know where those numbers are. I couldn't find a lot. I'm sure they're out there somewhere. But I do think that the NBA is going to be integrated for a while. And it is going to be to the benefit of the W for a number of years.
Yeah.
I don't think in the near future they no. should split.
And I kind of, to one last little bit on that, is like I have read a couple articles about, you know, this relationship. And kind of like you said, it is hard to find out where these numbers coming from. Like when you say the league is worth this much or like the NBA is, WNBA is losing this much, it's like, okay, well, how do we know? And it's like, it just is. and it's like, okay. And it's just, I read an article that was maybe a little bit more on the conspiratorial side, but I think it is maybe something to just like have in mind that the NBA is claiming they're subsidizing the W because it's not profitable enough on its own, which, you know, you could take, I'm not going to say that that's necessarily not true, but at the same time, the NBA has claimed that they aren't profitable in the past, like in the recent past, when it suits their narrative, when they need something.
Right.
They've been like, well, we aren't profitable. Like, for example, like, you know, these teams that are in the red previously, like, mm-hmm. we aren't profitable. We need this. We need that. I'm not saying that they do that all the time, but like, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And like I said, those numbers are really aren't out there where it's like, okay, well, how is the W not profitable? Especially like they just said that I guess the league somehow lost. Previously, it's been 10 million. Now they've lost apparently 40 million within the last year. But at the same time, they're losing more money when they have more money coming in than ever. It's like this article, this author was saying, is that a coincidence that when the players are now asking for money, suddenly the league is four times less profitable than it has ever been at a time when it's more popular than it's ever been? It's like, you know, it's hard. I think that's why, again, where this relationship, even though it's very necessary at the moment, I think is a little, it's tough. And I think that the numbers that get thrown out there are like kind of blur the lines. And yeah, we just don't really know what's going on. But I think like that can be sometimes a distractor from the fact that like no matter how well the league is doing, like the talent is there and the players have shown on their own that they can turn a profitable model with Unrivaled, for example. So the money needs to be there for them, and it's up to the owners to, like, figure out how they got to do it, but they got to do it.
Yeah. Definitely an interesting commentary on whether or not they are actually losing that much, I will say. But one other thing that I wanted to talk about in kind of the CBA, and it touches a little bit intertwined with prioritization, is kind of like the draft requirements, because that's also something that's been coming up a little bit more often lately. Mm-hmm. Just the fact that the draft is quite different than the NBA's requirements. Very different. And then there's also a very big distinction between domestic and international players too. So I don't know how much you like looked into that and stuff.
Given that the basics.
Given that I read the CBA, I'm well versed. I had to stop. There were so many parts of it I had to stop reading because I was like, this is too much information. I don't need all of this.
You should go see if you can represent some of the players in the upcoming.
Well, what do you think I'm going to law school for in 2 years?
Exactly.
Duh. But I will give some context to this, because with prioritization, I mean, we were talking about how a lot of these players go internationally, and I think that kind of increases the W's outreach and audience and interest of players abroad. So mm-hmm. we're kind of discussing these draft rules and whether they change. And it's like, okay, will that impact kind of the international interest in the W? I don't know. Because a lot of players right now, as you had noted, are international. But I did want to say, for domestic players, they have to be 22 years old at the end of the year of the draft's year. So whenever they're doing that. And then to clarify, domestic players, actually, if a player was born and resided in an internet, like a different country, but they came to the college, they came to the U.S. to play college basketball, they now count under domestic rules, which I thought was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Most, like the majority of players fall under domestic rules, even if they're not a U.S. citizen. But you have to be 22 years old. You pretty much have to be out of your college eligibility, or you renounce it, at least like 10 days before the draft. And then there were some weird like caveats, and I thought these were interesting. Players younger than 22 can enter the draft if they like graduated college or are 3 months away from graduating, which is also the same requirement like if you're 22. This is the weird exception to me. Players younger than 22 can enter the draft if their draft class is like meeting the above requirements. So if they're 3 months away from graduating or have graduated. So I'm like, oh, so you personally don't actually have to be 3 months away from graduating. International players, they are allowed to have played professionally prior to the W, but just not collegiately. And then they're eligible once they turn 20 years old in the draft's like calendar year. So very big distinction, because that's a couple years. But also maybe different experience, because I honestly don't know a lot about international basketball leagues. Maybe they're not. I don't know how they are compared to our like college feeder system, essentially, because obviously like college basketball here is very strong and very competitive, and you have amazing players coming in. Those were those kind of things. The only other thing that I'll mention is that players that go undrafted become unrestricted free agents, and they can't like rejoin the draft in other years. I honestly haven't looked into any other drafts of sports, so I don't know if that's normal or not, but interesting to note.
Well, I mean, I know six figures is nothing to, you know, shy away from, but at least while the entry level salaries are so low, I think it is fantastic that these women are graduating and getting their degrees. Like, the league is requiring them to graduate. I'm not sure they're not doing it expressly for the educational side, right. But it's like, if they're essentially going into what I would just say is like a normal person job in terms of compensation, you need to have like then something you could fall back on. Or if you're making millions of dollars a year, you get injured, you can't play anymore, okay, you have a pile of cash to sit on for a while. Here it's like, you get injured, you know your career is already going to be, you're not playing past 40 for sure, so you need to have, you know, money eventually out there. It's like, okay, well, when I'm done with that, at least you have that to fall back on. So I think that's like really important. I think also another point I've heard Gina Auriemma say before, who coaches UConn, that it's that restriction is helping grow the women's collegiate game a lot because yeah. players aren't able to jump early like they do for the men. They can jump after 1 year, one and done, common thing. For the women, yeah. if you're watching, you're getting to watch them play all 4 years at a team, at a team or multiple teams, and like get that name brand recognition, get that NIL, like have that growth, and then you see these big hot topic players like, again, Caitlin Clark, Kaylee Van Lith, Angel Reese, hopefully Juju Watkins, like AZ Fudd in the next few years, Paige Beckers, go to the league and
exactly
they're a like player everybody wants to see. I think with Paige Beckers you're seeing that
right
instantly. Like everybody
put me nobody, in that group.
Nobody
absolutely.
Doesn't want to watch Paige Beckers play basketball. Yeah. She's dope. In terms of the draft, I think there is some good there, but yeah, at the same time it is much, much, much more restrictive than any type of men's professional league would be. Like I said, the men can go one and done, and there might be an age restriction now, but previously there wasn't even an age restriction. They could go out of high school.
I agree with all the points you were saying. Like, I think that it helps grow the game, and I do think that it makes the sport inherently better on the college level and on the professional level.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very interesting to see that. And then, yeah, it can't harm the W's growth, so I like it. I'm even critical of the one and done of the NBA. Not that that would ever change, because why would it?
Yeah,
but but I am critical of that because it does make it really difficult for. And now you see it. This is a tangent, but now you see it even more with NIL and people jumping ship all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last thing that I really do want to touch on is, in case someone is listening to this and is like, okay, now what? As
yep.
we said, the CBA is expiring at the end of this month, October 31st, and it's really up in the air right now whether they'll actually reach a deal before that or not. So then that becomes a question, like, what do they do? They, assuming no deal is reached by October 31st, there are two kind of ways they can go about it. They could expand the deadline, which is easy, and they did do that when they signed this one in like 2019 into 2020. They did have to extend the deadline. The only issue that they face with that is it delays a lot of stuff. And especially there are two expansion teams coming in this off season that need to do, they have like their expansion team drafts, but those are technically part of, like, those are inherently a collective bargaining agreement. So they can't do those because it's all about free agency, because the free agency is not set by the new CBA. So there's no, like, governing body to actually oversee those drafts. So those would get really pushed back. And then that kind of calls into a lot of other questions. So that's one thing they could do. They could extend. The only other option would be a lockout, which this would have far more implications. Pretty much, like, players can't access any of their resources, like facilities, trainers, like all that kind of thing. They're just kind of doing their own thing at that time. Any league business, like official W business, kind of just stops, and except for this agreement. And then it also could lead to the delay of not only those expansion drafts, like I said, but also the draft lottery, like the regular draft lottery, free agency, which typically would open up right after the expansion drafts. Any trades that were made kind of in that time could also be delayed. And then worst case scenario, the season, 2026 mm-hmm. season is delayed too.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the two, there's really three ways they could go. And hopefully they find a deal before October 31st. But in case you're wondering kind of what is to come, those are kind of the three outcomes that are likely. Maybe there's a dark horse one in there that I don't know of, but I don't see.
Sure.
Other than those three, what else could happen?
Intentions are obviously pretty high right now, I guess. There's some comments that Nafisa Collier shared about what maybe leadership had said to her in a conversation
yep.
in terms of the players needing to be grateful and so we'll see how it goes. I think everyone obviously wants to reach a deal and they want everything
right.
to proceed and move forward, but there's definitely, yeah, it's definitely a lot of tension out there, but yeah, hopeful that they can get something done.
Yeah, I think leagues a lot of times kind of expect the players to back down on things, and this is definitely a time and some things that
the players really care about that I don't think they're backing down on, and nor do I think they should.
No.
So someone has to give. Hopefully it's the league, and we'll see where it goes from here. For this week's Fun Friday, Claire and I decided to create our own WNBA expansion teams. Neither of the cities that we're a fan of really like have one. So I did Boston and Claire did Pittsburgh. Boston almost had a WNBA team. They were supposed to, I think the Celtics owners were supposed to buy the Connecticut Sun and relocate them. But for unforeseen complications, it didn't happen.
Womp womp. But now we have a new pitch for them.
Exactly. So. Doesn't matter.
Their loss. But also
actually,
potentially their gain.
Yes, exactly. You read my mind. I will let you go first.
Okay, wonderful. All right. Okay, so also we have a few different categories of things that we each chose. So I'm just going to run through them real quickly just so you know what's coming up. You got the team name, obviously. The logo mascot drawing, which I think we're both very excited.
Which we'll save that for last.
Other, we'll save that for last. The celebrity investor, who's like, you know, I feel like a lot of teams sometimes, like expansion teams, they have like the big name person who wants to invest in the team. So that person. The arena slash venue where they're going to be playing. Which current college player would be your first round draft pick? And then the pregame hype up song, like in the warm-up that they play on the Jumbotron, like what's the song gonna be? And then the local courtside celeb who's like at all the games and they post on socials and like, you know, is helps with the brand recognition for the team. So my expansion team is gonna be called the Pittsburgh Phantoms. And part of the reason why I chose that is A, when we get to the logo I'll show, but I wanted to, all of Pittsburgh's teams have black and gold as like their color scheme, so I wanted to pick something that I could do black and gold and keep that going because that just like is important. And then also Kennywood, I don't know if people really know of Kennywood, but it's like a pretty famous theme park that's like a little bit like outside the city. And they have a really famous roller coaster called Phantom's Revenge.
Ah, okay.
And so I was thinking,
I see
like,
the vision.
Yes. So potential partnership there.
Oh, maybe a collab.
Collab moment.
Also, side note, love when a city has a unified color theme. Yes. We've definitely said this before on the pod, but big fan.
Yes, it keeps everything together nicely. And so obviously this new team, we're not going to disrupt that. We're going to keep it together. So Pittsburgh Phantoms, that's my reason for it. My celebrity investor slash part owner is going to be Serena Williams.
Ooh.
Because okay. Her husband, like was the founder of Reddit, has like a ton of money. She does as well, but he also has a ton of money. He's really big into propping up women's sports and investing in sports in general. And he's done kind of a lot of work with like advocating for that. I know he like is a part owner of an NWSL team and maybe some other stuff as well, but I know that for sure. And so I want to pick Serena because I don't know that she's necessarily expanded into ownership yet, but I'm thinking this would be her first venture. And she obviously also has a lot of money. So
yes. The capital, the contacts, you know,
everything. So that's my celebrity investor. The arena where they're going to be playing is Peterson Events Center, which is University of Pittsburgh, their basketball arena. It seats, I forget exactly how many, but I looked up like what the average W venue size was, and it was about the same. I was like, okay, it's like a good size for them. And then the W season is kind of like outside the time of like college basketball season, so they like won't be that overlap, so it should be okay. I'm assuming it lies dormant for basketball for like on most things, actually, for most of like the summer and stuff of when the W would be going on. So that's why I chose it. And also it's in a central location downtown, so it's like close, pretty easy for people to get to. And then also like it's right in like where all the colleges are, so like the younger student body can go and like get there pretty easily and things. So I've chosen that.
Okay, practical. I like it.
It's practical. Which current college player is my first round draft pick? I don't know if we've chosen the same person, but mine, I'm actually
probably,
hopefully we didn't, but mine is Juju Watkins.
Okay.
Did you choose Juju?
You'll find out.
Okay. Well, she's mine because I went first.
Okay. I didn't realize we were exclusive
No. But that's fine. If we were. Yes. But Juju is my pick, who actually they just announced that she's missing the whole of this upcoming season. recover from her ACL injury that she suffered right at the playoffs at the end of last year, which is a big bummer. Yep. Wish her well. But Juju's my pick. She's like, I think if Paige Beckers had not graduated already, Paige or Haley Van Lith would have been my pick. But Juju's like awesome. She's like multi-talented, very quick, tall, can shoot, can drive. Like she's really dope. So
yeah, she's a phenomenal player. Yeah,
she'd be a great all-around pick for the team. My pregame hype up video song. So it's Demons by Doja Cat. Doja Cat is one of my favorite artists, and I went to see her in concert a couple years ago, and that was like her opening song, and it was so unbelievably hype.
Okay.
And just the vibe was so there, and I love that song so dearly that I'm just like, okay, that would be really, really sick. I'm picturing the way she did at the concert, which is like the lights, the strobe lights, and like all of that. I think it would be super, super fun. And that song just always gets me going. It's always on my running playlist. Doja's always on my running playlist, but that song in particular is always there to hype me up and get me going. Vocal courtside celeb, I would choose Wiz Khalifa.
Okay.
Who is from Pittsburgh. He went to school in the city. And I just think he's like funny. And he's like a good, I think that's something that he would get into. Kind of like how Travis Scott got really into Iowa basketball when Caitlin Clark was there. I was like, I would hope that Wiz Khalifa would really enjoy the games here. And maybe he could even perform at times and things like that. So, yeah, he'd be my local courtside celeb. Okay. I think he's really funny.
I think
funny,
he'd bring really a good vibe to the function.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he'd like contribute something for like their social teams and things.
Right.
So he'd give like good content.
He'd give good content for sure. So yeah, should I show my mascot now?
I think should you share?
Okay. Yeah. Want to do that? I'll show the camera a little bit too, but I'll show Jenna first so you can see.
Oh, it is cute.
It's pretty cute. I did trace it. I found a little ghost online.
But it is very cute, I will say.
Show the camera. There's my little, my little Pittsburgh Phantom. They were in the drawing that I traced holding a pumpkin here, but I changed it to a basketball.
Very cute.
So they're dribbling, and they were a nice ghost, but I made them a mean ghost because I gave them eyebrows. Yeah. So they're a little bit spookier, and I made it gold. I put the gold accents in the eyes and the basketball and the little shadow ring that they have around them. So that's my little Pittsburgh Phantom. We're going to win it all in our first year. All
right.
So excited to see what you have going on.
Just you wait. I'm honestly a little surprised that, big fan, I'm surprised you didn't go off of I probably would have called them the Sparks. Do you remember our discussion on the Steelers logo and, like, I forget what they're called.
Hypercycloids?
Hypercycloids. But they're really sparks.
Right.
So I wouldn't have been surprised if you went with, like, the Pittsburgh
Sparks.
Hypercycloids. Hypercycloids, excuse me.
Yeah, you know, that was my first pick, but it didn't start with a P, so I, like, wanted to keep the...
roll off the tongue.
It didn't roll off the tongue.
All right, so I had Boston, and I kind of wanted to draw on the revolutionary names that a lot of them have.
I thought you were say the Revolutionary War.
Well, I actually kind of did.
I feel like it's inspired by the Tea Party.
Yeah. just wait. I will bring up the Tea Party.
I'm excited.
But, so, like, pulling on that, because you obviously have, like, the Patriots, but then you also have, like, the PWHL is the Boston Fleet, and then the MLS team is the New England Revolution. So, kind of things like that. I did the Boston Rebels. It's short, it's punchy, goes off of that. I also thought it's kind of like if you're rebelling or like you're a rebel, you're kind of daring to be different and like challenging the norm. So
I
really like that for a team that's trying to really break into something and grow. Kind of want to like, because of that, play into like the Boston Tea Party a little bit. And so, you know, like when you're at a game and on the Jumbotron, it says like, scream or make noise or whatever and like get rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of want that to be something like, this is like cheesy, so maybe not exactly this, but like the storm the ship moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where like they, you kind of like stomp and get rowdy and stuff. So I think that could be kind of fun.
Yeah, I love
especially
that.
Like in a moment where there's a timeout and it's important, whatever. I also think they should totally offer like Boston tea as like a concession. It can be alcohol infused if they really should choose, and knowing Boston, they would. But I think that would be kind of cool, really play into that. My celebrity investor / part owner is Uma Thurman, because she was born and raised in Boston. She also has a lot of capital and money and connections. She's also just cool.
Yeah, she does.
Like, I think she's just really cool, so can set a fun, good tone that figures out how to, like, really make the city embrace this new team. My arena has to be TD Garden, because go big or go home, and there's really only one venue. Didn't even consider any college venues. I was just like, why not? Like, we want them to be in... we want them to grow like the NBA, so let's put them in a venue that does exactly that. Also, TD Garden is very cool, so I do enjoy it. My current college player as my first draft pick is not Juju Watkins. It's AZ Fudd. I have to stay loyal to UConn.
When I was picking, I was like, I bet she's going to pick AZ.
Yes.
Which is a great pick. Fantastic pick.
Thank you. Yes. If I will say, though, if I was picking, like, any college player, I would, again, staying with UConn, but I would pick Sarah Strong because she is a phenomenal player and I cannot wait to see how she grows. Like, I know she was only a freshman last year, but, like, the immediate impact she had, if she was up, I would pick her. I cannot. So, I also really like Izzy Fudd. She's a phenomenal player. She's awesome. She's cool. I think she'd be very good for our brand. My pregame hype-up video song, I don't know why this was just stuck in my head the whole time, is Centuries by Fall Out Boy.
That's a great vibe for kind of the Boston Rebel.
That's what I was thinking. I think Centuries kind of has that, like, revolutionary vibe. Also, if I don't know if you can picture the album cover, but he has, like, the American flag on his face, face painted. And it is just a really hyped song.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a good one for them to be, like, running out to. Yeah.
Agreed.
Big fan.
I like it.
Then my local courtside celeb is Steve Carell.
Oh my god.
Funny, right? Like, random. He's actually from Massachusetts. He isn't from Boston, but grew up there. And then now he actually splits his time with his family between LA and Boston. And they spend most of the summers, but even parts of the winters, on the South Shore. During my research, I found that he bought a general store, like, at that beach to save it from going under.
Oh.
And, like, will work the cash registers at the store.
Oh, sick.
Sometimes. Yeah. So I figured, okay, he's there a frequent amount, and, like, he's so down to earth and chill, but he's also hilarious. So I think he would be very supportive of the team and be an awesome person to kind of have there regularly. And then, you know, he'd provide good content, too. So now I have my logo / mascot drawing. So something I noticed with the W teams is that they really tried to use every team pretty much had the same colors as their NBA counterpart, which is kind of hard to do for the Celtics just because it's like a really distinct,
really specific. Yeah.
Yeah. So I pulled inspiration from their logo style, but I pulled the colors more so from kind of like the Patriots and the Red Sox, I'd say, and a little bit of the Bruins. So I kind of tied all of it together.
Mm-hmm.
I did not trace anything for this.
Okay, legend. No need to brag.
But I really enjoy it.
Girl! Wait, that is quite good.
Thanks. The proportions are so off, but this is...
That's quite
this
good.
This was my vision. Thank you. So yeah, you have like this... Boston Celtics is this circle, and they have the logo exactly like this.
Show the camera.
I will show the camera.
Describe.
And then this is supposed to be a lantern.
Bro, I noticed that. That was what my eye was drawn to. That's so funny.
And it's the basketball isn't that great. It's supposed to be a basketball, like, into a flame. Kind of like if you would look at the New York Liberty's torch.
Yeah.
They have it.
Yes.
So that was kind of the inspiration for that. And then this is supposed to be a braid.
I got that too.
I did have AI draft something after I drew this in case it was hilariously bad and
you need to clear.
Which they didn't nail it, but they did the braid and the face a lot better. The only thing they missed was the lantern.
Yeah.
I want the hand holding the lantern like Paul Revere style. And I want the flame in the middle.
Yeah, that's good.
But I will show the camera because this is a little bit more clear. But yeah, so that I introduced to you the Boston Rebels.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I think these are two great expansion teams.
I do too. Yeah. And I can't wait to see them. in 2027.
A couple years down the line.
Yes. Well, 2026 is already, they already have three, so mm-hmm. they can, you know.
Once they get that through.
Get out over there, and then they can focus all of their attention on to way more important
We're there teams, to step so. In. We have 2 years to pitch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Uma Thurman, if you're listening, please sponsor this team. Thank you for listening to the 18th episode of The Athlete in the NARP. We hope you enjoyed our discussion on the WNBA's growth, their future for revenue sharing and prioritization, as well as our fun Friday where Claire and I decided and created WNBA expansion teams.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at The Athlete in the NARP. You can email us at theathleteinthenarp@gmail.com with content suggestions, clarifications, or questions. Until next time, I'm Claire Fenton.
And I'm Jenna Daly.
And this has been
The Athlete and the NARP.